This is Margie Thompson, and I'm very pleased to be talking with Adelia Carabaca, who has been joined us in FIRE a number of times in the past. And Adelia is a human rights lawyer and an activist, and also coordinator of WILF, Women's International League of Peace and Freedom for Costa Rica. So welcome to FIRE, Adelia.
Thank you.
Adelia, for November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, can you talk about the work of WILF in this particular area, and especially as it relates to violence against women?
Okay. Well, WILF Costa Rica frames its work with the international program of WILF, which has one of its main topics, the construction of a culture of peace, and in that we work to promote human rights of women, to prevent violence, and training children and raising consciousness about abuses, and trying to have them more alert and more trained about the resources they can have and how to protect themselves from abuses. So that's on a preventive approach. WILF Costa Rica also has given legal support to women. We want to do it more. Sometimes we just don't have enough resources, but we do lots of networking. And since we see women's human rights on many areas, we also do work with a network of migrants, and in that area we work with migrant women. You know, right now also we are carrying a project in Los Guidos, which is a slum community, and we're trying to do lots of work with young people.
The connection between violence against women and human rights is not something that was originally recognized back in 1948 with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and through the decades, but can you talk about how it came to be recognized that violence against women is a violation of human rights and a violation of women's human rights?
Yeah, we were very active in that process too, in the preparation for the Conference on Human Rights that took place in Vienna in 1993. And it was surprising to see how hard it was for many people, even in the movement of in the left and the social organizations, to understand what it implied to have this recognized as a human rights, and to really make the state responsible to ensure to the safety of women. Nowadays it seems like a far away. It seems to be now that we have made a list in the general culture, in the general discourse, that this is today very much accepted and out of discussion. I mean, women's rights are human rights, but what does it imply, and what is the degree of commitments from the institutions of the state and in the culture, in the communities, in the media, in many other fronts, to what extent there is really engagement in trying to do some the necessary efforts to change this culture of violence and this misogyny that is there implicit in many messages that in a way promote this lack of respect to women, and to really make an effort to understand and connect how all this culture promotes the violence against women in their homes, in the streets, in the way women are treated at the workplace, in the schools, in the streets. And there seems to be a lot of more work to do there. I mean, on the formal front, nobody will discuss nowadays that women's rights are human rights and that the state has a responsibility there. But how much resources are allowed to that and how serious this is taken, that's another story.
Why is that?
This is a huge task, and it really requires leadership in joining different people, you know, women's organizations, but more than that, and really making this issue be understood as a human right issues that implies that it's an issue that limits democracy, that limits the enjoyment of human rights, the freedom of expression, the freedom of being, the freedom of having a full development of somebody's personality that affects since childhood, requires to involve the state in many sectors, not just women. The challenge now is to see this not as a women's issues or a women's responsibility. It's a society responsibility, and it's a state's responsibility, and it's the media responsibility to educate on this and to understand the roots and to engage men also in this. Although, you know, we women know that when we want changes, we need to be involved, and it is our desire and our commitment. But we have to build bridges, create ways, mechanisms to challenge and also be open to involve men that are sensitive in this kind of task. And I don't know, do this, it will take probably many efforts. And we have to have also the challenge to do this with hope, with openness, and not from just a victim's perspective. We need to make this struggle, this task, also in a very affirmative way, not just talking as victims, but really challenging and really being very creative. I don't know how to explain it.
But the role of the state is changing. With globalization, with neoliberalism and structural adjustment. Now there's a big struggle over the free trade agreements where Costa Rica has not signed on yet, but there are marches in the streets with many involving many women and so on. How do you see this shift in the role of the state in terms of the responsibility of the state for social problems such as violence against women? How has that shifted, and what are the implications of that?
This shift in being, you know, having the state kind of giving a pleasing discourse to women or organized women, and, you know, yeah, they accept that the state has something to do, but it's been a long time since the state has been reducing the resources, financial resources, at least in the administrative sector, to the mechanism to advance women. Like in the case of Costa Rica, the Institute of Women has had very little support from the state, even though there is a law. They have found ways to distract money that should have been allocated to really work in this direction. And although they do it, you know, we have the Institute of Women. We have a law that gives autonomy. We have commissions of women in the municipalities. But all of these have no resources. I mean, when there is no money allocated for this, and this money has been used in the past administration, it was there somewhere making as a deposit. It was discovered almost apparently by accident. One of the chief of the Women's Institute found this money, and then it was used in an emergency situation. Of course, you know, there are always good reasons to use money, but, you know, the situation of women, the women that are being killed, or this culture that allow women to be killed or abused all the time, is also an emergency, and it's also a priority, and it's been said like that. But it was amazingly, I mean, it was shocking to learn that all the money for this institute was there in a bank making interest, and when it was finally available, they used it for something else, for other campaigns to take care of an emergency because of floods or because of, you know, natural disasters. And of course, the money was needed there, but there are other state resources that should have been used for that, and it's not an excuse to leave women and women that are doing this work and need to do work at a local level in municipalities with nothing. So you have a woman in charge of that that is there with a small salary and with no money for even a publication or to attend, you know, to give any kind of support to women that need support to deal with the legal system or whatever, to educate, to do all the networking that needs to be done at a local level too, there is no money. So there seems to be a double discourse. You know, I don't think that with the change of the possibility of the free trade agreement is changing this. This is it seems to be not explicit, but there is some, I don't know, some movement that is holding the possibility of women really do the work that needs to be done, and also of not really engaging in a full commitment. So probably if we have CAFTA approved, there will be, you know, more economic difficulties in many institutions. I don't know. I couldn't say exactly what will be the link of this, if there is necessarily a direct link. But what is a fact that even without that, the situation of women is not, and women institutional mechanisms are not complying what they were expecting. And, you know, even in this administration, without having that approved, we don't have a Ministry of Women Affairs as we did in the past. So it seems to be a tendency to profile and lower the importance that this kind of mechanism should have and the support that it should have.
So what strategies do you think that women can use, either at the local level or the national level, the regional, international? I mean, is it a matter of connecting together different strategies and different efforts within the women's and feminist movements?
Okay, we have in our countries, you know, luckily now, many women organizations. And I have the feeling that we are, in a good degree, scattered, you know, and there is kind of diffused agendas, you know. Different women organizations have their own field of work, some very specialized, and there seems a need to have some degree of leadership or willingness to accept leaderships in at least certain campaigns, in campaigns that unite, you know. So there are issues that at certain point have played this role of uniting, you know, when we have had the need to have certain laws approved. It has been the case. And so probably we need to unite certain days like today, unite many women organizations. Although many of us have different ways to deal with violence against women, there are cultural scenes, there are work with children, there are works against the use of arms in the houses, the use of violent toys in Christmas times, for instance. There are different issues that I've seen. Joining in campaigns against very specific issues can help strengthen our movement. Yes. So campaigning, helping each other, helping when there are situations like in the situation that right now is going on in Guatemala with this, especially difficult situation, you know, of women. Genocide. I mean,
can you talk more about that?
You know, we have had it's very much known. You know, the situation of the women in Suarez in Mexico, and this situation of women, and the lack of willingness of the state to really investigate what's going on, what's behind all this passive attitude from the police. I think if women around the world join against these things, you know, and like we have had in the past campaigns, like women in the world joining against the war in Iraq and supporting the movement of mothers, calling the administration to bring back the soldiers and to put a stop to this. This kind of campaign very much unite. And I think in the case of Guatemala and the impunity that is going there, and in the need to learn more of this and to prevent this from happening in other places, especially when there could be the situation that we may have more concentration of factories in certain areas that are not safe. And this training, in the way the economic development, especially with this trade agreement, that tend to concentrate and to, you know, have this concentration of women, working women, you know, there is a class issue also involved, because this thing is happening to women that are poor, that need to do this kind of work, that are very young, and that are very vulnerable. And it also has to do not just with this, you know, with the way economic development and jobs are created, and that are created in a way that is not safe for women. Besides the economic exploitation and the low wages, there is the way the physical space and the way the schedules and are set up. So there is many things that I wish and I hope, and that's another thing that it may be interesting to see how women can be more united in having more the women in our parliaments, you know, increasingly, and that's one of the results and the differences that women have achieved since the moment women's rights have been seen as women's rights. Women's participation in politics has also implied that now increasingly the political parties has been forced to have more women elected in the parliament. So a possibility and a challenge there is to really make the women from the different political parties unite to force some legislation and to work around some legislation that really favors the situation of women and to investigate cases like this or to create law that can address these kind of situations. And I think women's organizations can also support when there is a good initiative in the parliament to address specific urgent issues like this.
Thank you very much, Adelia. To finish up, would you like to give a message to the audience on behalf of WILF for November 25th?
Yeah, WILF as an international organization has, as you know, in its name, it's peace and liberty. So what I would like to say, you know, we understand and stress peace as a situation in which we really enjoy all our human rights, and we live our freedom and we promote the freedom. So let's try to add enjoying that with freedom. And I like to also take the opportunity to say that WILF will have its 100 years of existence to be celebrated in 2015. So since now, we are working on having a very big celebration with all the women organized around the world.